From the streets of Melrose Park to the trading floor of the Merc, he's fought for every dollar he's ever earned. And now, with personal liberty and our system of capitalism under assault in America, he's here to seize back our rights from the government. With a cigar in one hand and a copy of the Declaration of Independence in the other, he's Sean Thompson. And this is the Sean Thompson Show. This looks like a job for me, so everybody just follow me, because we need a little controversy, because it feels so empty without me. I said this looks like a job for me.
I love the title of certain books. I love the title of certain books. I always liked when guys I used to trade with in the pit would write a book, and I would always say, huh, look at this guy, wrote more books than he ever read. And it would be like called like F Wall Street and the rest of it. Some more. But this one encapsulates how I would title a book. I absolutely love it. What's next, Chicago? Notes of a pissed off native son. So I had to get him on. Matt Rosenberg, how are you?
Sean, I'm doing great. How are you, my friend?
Very good. You know what I like to say about Chicago? It's a great place to be from. Right? It was great when we were kids. The pride you had in it, the city constantly worked, the certain, you know, just going to succeed attitude you got from everybody walking the streets. In fact, I remember when it was rare to see a bum, and it's changed quite a bit. And now it's normal to have our traffic girl include shootings in the reason that traffic is delayed. Massive shooting on Grand Avenue. Traffic's a nightmare. It's like a comedy skit, isn't it?
Things have just changed so much. You know, I mean, I grew up here in the 1960s when you could go to the Stockyard Inn before the Bulls game at the amphitheater. That's how far I go back. And you could brand your steak with your initials, and then they'd cook it up just the way you wanted. But yeah. More importantly,
that's good.
You know, it was a working man's town then. But flash forward, right? The economy has changed. And so we're not keeping up. We're not really innovating at a policy level or an economic level, I fear, here in Chicago. And you combine that with a failure of all our major institutions, starting too often in some parts of town with the family, but extending to our city government and our court system and our schools, we've got real problems here. Meanwhile, you know, the cities that Chicago progressives sneer at, places like Phoenix and Dallas and Jacksonville and Charlotte, are starting to eat our lunch. Nashville, for that matter, even Chattanooga. Everybody's moving to Chattanooga. So there are amenities, there are schools that teach, there are relatively safe streets, there are lower taxes, and we're stuck in a couple of bad ruts, including Mayor Lightfoot's emphasis on systemic racism. We've got systemic misrule instead by an urban political elite that's increasingly of color. We got real problems here.
And Matt, I have identified, and it's not just me, economists that go back to the Austrian economists from 100 years ago put a face on the fact that what always built ghettos was political policies. And it's the political policies that have shuttered the doors. It's the political policies that have turned victims into people who are not protected by law and the perpetrators who are. Do the Chicagoans themselves recognize this yet? I understand that they have been put through the school system of the Chicago public schools. However, have they figured out that one party rule and the idea of systemic corruption, not racism, is the problem? That Chicago suffers from systemic corruption?
Yes, they do recognize what you've just brought up, specifically that link to policy, that all of this is a matter of policy implemented by urban progressives in Chicago and, of course, around the country in other big cities that are also struggling almost as bad as Chicago. I spoke to black people on the South Side. That was my mission. I came back here last year after watching the city flying apart I moved into Bridgeport, where, you know, at least there weren't too many gunshots on the street at night, only every now and then. And I took the bus down into the South Side to Washington Heights, to Roseland, to Pullman, to Englewood, particularly, and talked to people in their homes and their backyards. And they said, this is a matter of policy. And they specifically cited the welfare programs that started in the 60s. And, you know, I picked up some nuance. I spoke to a woman who was a mother at 17, a single mother, and working in a Burger King, and she pulled her way up to owning a realty company in 4 short years and then became a homeschooler and is a homeschooling entrepreneur now, educating other people's children. She benefited from government programs, but she firmly believes, you know, this is for a year or two or three. This is to help you get a leg up. When this becomes a permanent choice, there's a big problem. And I heard that from others. So, yeah, there's an understanding, an awareness, and a resentment at the way that these policies have been foisted. And we know, you know, there's been welfare reform, sure. You know, the social welfare programs of now are not the same as the 60s. We can talk about that till we're blue in the face, but the idea is still the same. So there's this understanding you've got to get off the government teat and, you know, get on the stick yourself. And that's huge.
And you know what I loved about growing up here? When I was a kid, I'm talking eighth grade, we had a family friend who I worked by my grandfather's auto parts store. And then on the weekends, or Monday and Sunday night, the South Water Market was vibrant. And you used to go down there and help them load the truck. Back then, it'd give you $25. Or you could go to the Stockyard Meatpacking for the summer when you were in high school and work at Stockyard Meatpacking. And in fact, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange employed tens of thousands of Chicagoans. And the reality was my coworkers were of different races. I hate to even speak in that, but they were. And we all shared that same dream to work our way to a better situation. When the policies crush those industries, when they change them, when they shrink them, reality is it's the people that always suffer. And then they become susceptible to a welfare system that makes it advantageous to be on, where the quality now is that if you're on food stamps, you get $835 under this new mandate, this executive order, when the average family of four spends $535. So it's such a culmination. It's such a diabolical plot that I feel we're losing because of the willful ignorance of the people. They get that hopeless futility, and then they succumb to this kind of change in an economy. Do you think that there will be a bright spot? Are the people of Chicago, that working class mentality, are they going to reject this socialism, or do you think they'll accept it?
It's a really iffy right now, and I think we need to see a rising up that begins with civic engagement and greater voter participation. I do think a lot of the extreme rhetoric that's been occurring around race, around what I would call racial essentialism, is tipping a lot of people toward a breaking point, including many black people that I spoke to. But we've got a problem with civic engagement here, so that has to somehow change. And who can inspire communities of color to step up, get engaged, and vote, and not just for the same old people and the same old policies? That's a big question. But if you look at voting turnout here in our local Chicago elections, we get actually a paltry 33% of registered voters showing up to vote. And that compares to 70% plus in Chicago in the presidential election. So I think, first of all, let's change state law to allow the city of Chicago to hinge its local election dates to the presidential elections. That would be a great start, along with truly independent mapping of the new wards and term limits, and Matt, a total reform of public contracting.
Now, Matt, I moved out of the area a little while ago. I made the final decision to get out completely in January of this year. I started to move out last year. And when I started 7 years ago to travel, even I was taken aback by the reality of other cities and other states wouldn't tolerate this systemic corruption that so many Chicagoans accept. For instance, the reason we vote when we vote is because they wanted to make it difficult to vote. They wanted to put it in the dead winter in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that we have the mafia, the Democrat mafia that we have, is because they allow certain trickery of municipal workers to go out and get people. They have their version of the old-fashioned ballot or the new ballot harvesting. We've been doing that for 70 years. Hasn't the Illinois or Chicagoans specifically just accepted it? Otherwise, how else could you explain the Mike Madigan name, who is synonymous with Al Capone and Don Corleone? Everyone admits he is a Democrat mafia head. In his upper echelon, they never get in trouble. In fact, they're in trouble right now, yet I hear nothing of his close staff, of Cullerton, of the rest of them. It's all just gone by the wayside, and they all are supposedly under indictment and yada, yada, yada. The meantime is these are 80-year-old successful mafia dons. And to a young kid, especially in our neighborhoods, wouldn't you almost admire that rather than say, that's got to change?
Well, in a way, and if you look at where the fix is in, it's in as high as at the state Supreme Court. If you look at what they've upheld.
Mrs. Burke?
And yes, and what they've rejected. And so this is a Democrat majority state Supreme Court that is, if you, again, the specifics are there, is one of the most plutocratic entities you could possibly imagine. They struck down a 2016 proposal for a constitutional initiative to mandate independent mapping of the legislative districts. But no, like the Democrats, they're in league with, they like non-competitive elections. They've struck down various voter initiatives that would reform the way that we elect people, how long they can be in office. They've let very little through. They've always acted on behalf of the entrenched interests, particularly with respect to that part of our state constitution which upholds the public employee pension mess, the mandated 3% annual compounded increase every year in pension benefits, even when the cost of living has not risen that high. And if you look at the effect of that across the municipal workforce in Chicago and in the state of Illinois, of hundreds of thousands of people that we are paying not to work anymore, because apparently the government needs to invest their money, they can't. The whole thing is just really a big rotten mess. It truly is.
So I got two questions for you before I let you go, because I could talk to you forever. When you see the news stories and you see that the organized labor extortion racket called unions can motivate 70, 80 people to go out at El Milagro worker rally, yet the 14-year-old that was shot and his father weeps, they get 3 people, they get 5 people. The 7-year-old that shot on Grand Avenue, they get the guy. Kim Fox doesn't prosecute. Nobody comes out. No matter the tragedy of the 67-year-old special ed teacher killed for no reason on the expressway, the fact that we've got 20 shootings a month on the expressways, not including just Chicago alone, I mean, it's astronomical. Yet the labor mafia can get out people at the drop of a phone call, and I get a bunch of these donut connoisseurs prancing around talking about the people's rights. Isn't it just going to be more communist advancement here in the sewer of Chicago/city?
I hold out some hope because I think people are, I could be just naive and optimistic here. I think people are starting to put two and two together. And sometimes it takes a disruption to your way of life. I think there's a little bit of a hypocrisy in that white people have not been terribly concerned about crime until it came downtown and to the near west side. In the near north side, this goes on every day on the south and the west side, but it's also raising awareness. Now really where the awareness needs to be raised and the engagement stepped up is in communities of color. I think there's a chance we could be at a turning point. Now look to New York City. Eric Adams is a Democrat, but he's a solid, smart, moderate Democrat who supports police, is very aware of police brutality. He experienced it as a young man. He supports school choice. If New York can replace Bill de Blasio with somebody like Eric Adams, maybe there's some hope from Chicago. Who's that person going to be? People are talking about Arne Duncan quite a lot. He's not a bad guy. I interviewed him for my book.
Oh, I don't like Arne.
Skeptical.
It's me. Put me in skeptical. I think if you've played Skins, if you were on the Skins side when Barack played basketball and versus the shirts, I got to look at you a little hazy.
I understand that. How about Ray Lopez?
I like Ray Lopez. Ray Lopez is, I like.
Do too.
I like Ray.
There's a guy who speaks the truth.
How about Paul Vallis?
You know, I love Paul Vallis. He's everything you
look
would
at us.
Want. The mayor, he's too smart.
We're like a think tank. No, he's not. Listen, he's not smart enough to stop calling himself a Democrat, so let's not give him too much credit. Now, before I let you go, you said you went to Bridgeport. Is that because you married one of those Bridgeport girls? I was always attracted to those Bridgeport girls. They were smart. They were mean. They were pretty. And if your car broke down, they get out and change the tire. I loved them. They were wonderful.
I love that. No, I married a nice girl from everywhere. Her dad was in the Air Force, but we met in Chicago. We were married by a Cook County divorce court judge, true fact,
nice.
The non-denominational chapel. And he said to us after the ceremony, I don't want to see you again, because he's a divorce court lawyer. 34 years later, so far so good, but I've never been able to say that to Chicago. And, there's a huge duality here.
Yeah.
It's vibrant, it's beautiful, but it's so messed up.
Yeah.
So I say, no, we can't give up.
The other downside, too, you're lucky, because if you married, he's like, I married the prettiest girl. I married the prettiest girl in Elmwood Park. You can't get them out of these neighborhoods. You got to call in a bomb threat or something. You can't get them out of the neighborhood. So the good news is, at least yours will be willing to leave now. But these Bridgeport girls, they never leave. Melrose Parkers, the Elmwood Parkers, the Gale, they never leave. You got to threaten them. But listen, I've had a good time. Good luck with the book. What's next, Chicago? Notes of a pissed off native son. You know, I got the book, but it's not signed. And you know how I like a signed book. Maybe next time.
We got to do that. It's on Amazon. People should go there and look it up.
Thank you very much, Matt Rosenberg. I appreciate it.
Sean, a pleasure.
He believes in freedom, capitalism, and individual liberty. And because of that,
he's become an enemy of the state.
He's Sean Thompson, and this is the Sean Thompson Show on AM 560, The Answer.